wanted to do. This is not in accordance with the law. There is a world of difference between being authorized to do something and having been directed to do something. If a clandestine agent thinks that he should put a telephone bug on some citizen and request authorization, he may think he can do it if some intermediate officer of the government says he could, or perhaps even if this intermediate simply did not say anything. On the other hand, if the NSC has come up with something very important and feels that the CIA should do it, then it is an entirely different matter for the NSC to call the director of the Central Intelligence in and say, "We want you to carry out this intelligence operation, to do it by a certain date, and report back to us." Then there is no doubt about the reason for doing it, no doubt about how and when it should be done. And then the CIA knows that it has received proper authorization from the highest authority in the country. If President Kennedy had followed this pattern, he would not have become involved in the Bay of Pigs operation. His own advisors would have told him not to do it. Congress was correct in writing the law this way, and now the President and Congress must see to it that the law is carried out as it was intended. In the second of this series, we shall discuss the first duties of the CIA as they are written into the law and as they were properly intended to be done. This is Fletcher Prouty from Washington, D.C. For a free copy of this book,
he said that E. Howard Hunt, convicted Watergate conspirator, was not in Dallas November 22nd, and that he would not reopen the investigation. One of the things I illustrated at Boston at the meeting of various researchers a few weeks ago was the description of Gerald Ford, the Senate at the time, interrogating J. Edgar Hoover, a member of the Warren Commission. Gerald Ford was asking J. Edgar Hoover, acting director of the FBI, about keeping the investigation of the John Kennedy assassination open for all time. This is in Volume 5 of the Warren Commission hearings, page 100. And Gerald Ford got the word. As a member of the Warren Commission, he, under oath to uphold the conditions of the Warren Commission meetings and so forth, Gerald Ford got word of the acting director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, that any new evidence that came in would be considered and that the opening of the Kennedy assassination would be continuous for all time. Any new evidence should be examined. Well, in 11 years, there's been much new evidence that has appeared, new photographs, ballistics, fingerprints, documentation of conspiracy down in Dallas, and it is not the position of Mr. Kelly to say that he will not reopen the investigation. We have to support Congressman Gonzales and the various researchers like myself who are behind Congressman Gonzales to open this matter. Gerald Ford was appointed by Richard Nixon, who has been named as being suspect in the Kennedy assassination, his links with E. Howard Hunt, his being in Dallas at the home of Mr. Murchison the night before Kennedy was killed with J. Edgar Hoover. This was written up in Penn Jones' book. Richard Nixon, whose name has been brought up in conjunction to the Kennedy assassination, appointed Clarence Kelly to be director of the FBI, just as he appointed Gerald Ford to be the vice president, the man who was on the Warren Commission. So these men have a vested interest in protecting each other. But we did see the precedent was set to remove the president, a former attorney general, and various people of power, the acting director of the FBI, Patrick Gray, and John Mitchell were removed from office, and anyone who covers up these cases should be removed from office as part of the cover-up. There will be every effort made to keep the Kennedy assassination from being opened, and I think the statement of Mr. Kelly in Dallas was appropriate 1 week after the Boston Convention, where it got national attention that people were moving in on these assassination conspiracies. But I don't think that he should have the last word in lieu of who appointed him, so we'll pass it up and continue to do our research and pressure Congress to go into this matter like they did the Watergate. Another effort was made to reject Sirhan's plea. The California Supreme Court met last week, February the 14th, since our last show, and they turned down a petition of Sirhan's based on new ballistic evidence. The court turned down, without any comment, Sirhan's petition for a new trial in California. Now, that is something which I believe will have to be opened up from the inside, and we're going to talk a little more about that in a few minutes. The people involved in the killing of Robert Kennedy will surface from the inside before the state Supreme Court or the Supreme Court in Washington will allow a new hearing. Now, in the case of Sirhan, I know it's hard to get a new trial going, but when you have 10 bullets and the gun only shoots 8, and the new ballistic evidence shows that the bullet in Mr. Weissel doesn't match a bullet in Robert Kennedy, there's such flagrant evidence of a conspiracy there that the court wouldn't even examine the evidence. They turned it down yesterday without comment, and they will not open any new evidence. They just turned down flatly Sirhan's plea. I think it's a shame that the plea came this early, because this week the movie The Second Gun is going to be shown in Chicago and then in Washington, and it should have national distribution of the alleged conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy before the Supreme Court had a chance to turn it down. But they acted very swiftly, and they said that they won't consider it. It's without comment. But again, I think that the John Kennedy assassination, the Robert Kennedy assassination, will be unfolded as conspiracies in spite of the judges, the Supreme Court, and the corrupt judges and lawyers and the public officials who are concealing the conspiracy. Watergate isn't over. It's still going on, as you can see by the California Supreme Court in Mr. Kelly. The cover-up keeps going on and on. Also last week, E. Howard Hunt denied a part in the John Kennedy plot. Various researchers, including myself, have said that he had a role in the plot. I have not said he was at Dealey Plaza, but I believe he was involved for 31 different reasons. We've talked about many on the air in the John Kennedy assassination. He has denied that he was in Dallas November 22, 1963, but my research never placed him there anyway. There is a picture of a gentleman known from the Bums picture. It's called Three Men Taken Away by the Police in Dallas, Texas. There is a picture of a man that resembles Frank Sturgis. But Frank Sturgis has an attorney who says that he, speaking for him, says he refuses to say whether or not he was in Dallas on that date. Now, that's an interesting position for him to say, because all that Sturgis has to say was categorically, I was not in Dallas on that day. In those days, he was working under the name of Frank Fiorini, and his name came up in the 26 volumes and in the archives in relationship to the John Kennedy assassination and his role in Miami. But he has not said a word about the Dealey Plaza incident or whether or not he was in Dallas. And that silence is very interesting, and it being as it comes the same week that Mr. Kelly says he won't open up the case because E. Howard Hunt wasn't there. He hasn't said the interesting aspect of whether Frank Sturgis was there. There was an article, jumping to one more article that was in the news today that I don't want to spend too much time on, but you'll be seeing it. This is dated Monday, February 17th. It's about a gentleman named Joseph Burton, who was an FBI operative in Canada. And the importance of this article is that there's many parallels into what he's saying as into the John Kennedy assassination 11 years ago. He said that he worked for the FBI, and that he set up a phony front, a Marxist cover. He posed as a Marxist in order to infiltrate revolutionary groups in the United States. Lee Harvey Oswald posed as a Marxist when he was working for Navy intelligence and for the FBI. The FBI denied the fact that Mr. Burton was an agent. He said he was not a special agent of the FBI. However, he was a paid informant. This is what Mr. Burton said, and he has his salary here of how much he earned. He claims he was a paid informant and received $2,923 from the FBI, and Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald, was also a paid informant of the FBI. He set up what he called in Tampa the Red Star Cadre, which was a front for his FBI work, which is a phony communist front that was his cover. That's the way the FBI, CIA has set up the Symonese Liberation Army and a lot of these liberation fronts, which are funded by the CIA and FBI, that do not in fact exist and create a lot of division among the radical groups later and are cover for other operations. Mr. Burton claims that he went to China and he was asked to infiltrate Canadian communist groups and act like pro-Chinese, and he was even sent to China with a group of people a few years ago, and he didn't want to insult the Chinese anymore. They made up a delegation of what they called American radicals and sent them away, and he wanted to end this charade and stop insulting the Chinese, so he blew his cover. His companion was a 36-year-old housewife and mother, and they spent 4 weeks in China in 1971. This woman is married to a mathematician and has a family, and she's the identical counterpart to Ruth Payne, who housed Marina and Lee Oswald in her home, who acted under the cover of being a Quaker and the civil liberties, active in the civil liberties. Ruth Hyde Payne was, for military intelligence, I'm convinced that her cover was always this front of wanting to learn the Russian language and having contacts in the Soviet Union. She never discussed who they were or how frequently she'd kept up their contacts. But this housewife and mother was the companion to Mr. Burton, and their cover was American Radicals. Well, he's blowing the activities now with his salary and her salary and the Red Star cadre, the front, but it brings up the point, much of the news that's surfacing confirms what my research has showed me, the use of these front organizations, the use of the Marxist cover when it doesn't in fact exist, phony names like the Red Star cadre, the infiltration of radical groups, and the use of female companions for these people as espionage agents that are very deceptive. I also briefly want to mention that Hale Boggs' son has a file now. It turns out the FBI kept a file on the sex habits of people investigating the Warren Commission. Maybe you read that last week. I don't know if you read it or not, or heard it on the news. The son of Hale Boggs, Democrat from Louisiana, who was on the Warren Commission, had access from his father's files, from the dossiers that the FBI compiled on critics of the Warren Commission. And it mentions Mark Lane and Jay Epstein. And there were seven other couples engaging in unnatural sex acts or extramarital behavior. And this was this came out in the news a few weeks ago. And this shows the desperation of the FBI and the CIA that people who were investigating the Warren Commission, the Warren Report, were compromised or seduced and photographed and put in this position in order to break their credibility later. I was aware of the FBI use of blackmail and call houses and lovers and extramarital traps to discredit people years ago. And as a matter of fact, I've spoken about it many times, I don't see how that breaks the credibility of a person's research or documentation on ballistics or evidence because of who you sleep with or what position you sleep in. And for my radio listeners, I just hope I didn't make the enemy list, but in case I make the Warren Commission report pornography list, don't be too shocked. I remember there was a time where I was doing behavior that, and I would say, you know, before I went to bed, I'd say, "Goodnight, Jake," meaning J. Edgar Hoover, and joke about it because I went under the assumption that certain people that came to me or were seducing me or wanting to make contact with me were sent by the intelligence agencies and were connected directly to military. And there was always this, are you paranoid or realistic or what are the possibilities? And it was very open conversation during a period of years, right after I came home from New Orleans or at the period when I was in contact with Jim Garrison. He had arrested Clay Shaw, and there were a couple of years in there where this was a big possibility until I just almost cut off most relationships with many, many people because I suspected them of trying to use even this ploy. So now it turns out that they do have this list, and I'll write to Mr. Boggs' son and ask him, Tom H. Boggs Jr., and see just which researchers the FBI did have and what he has on his desk. But nothing shocked me. It didn't shock me at the time. I knew they were doing it and capable of it, so I just thought I have my own personal life to live and my own way of doing things, and if that's what they want to do, they should do it. But I did bring it up as a subject, you know, and a possibility many times, and I think it's pretty funny that now, these years later, it's coming in the news that this is, in fact, what they were doing to researchers. So we'll put a little investigative work on that and see what comes up. Now, the bulk, the rest of the show today, I'm going to talk about two pieces of news that are terribly important, give you the sources of the information, because this is what I call a biggie. These are big stories. Sometimes you have isolated events like the things I just ran down that are happening in the news, but these are biggies, bigger than a half hour, and I do want to bring them up to you. One is an article in the New York Times by James Phelan, dated February the 8th, and it's about a burglary at the Howard Hughes headquarters on Romaine Street in Los Angeles. There was a burglary recently, we're going to talk about it. The name of the article is New Hughes Mystery, A Theft of Secret Papers and Ransom. The man refused. This is New York Times, a burglary of the Hughes headquarters in Los Angeles, California. The second article, which is important, is from a magazine called Advertising Age, February the 3rd, 1975. And it's about the J. Walter Thompson Agency, the public relations firm, and their CIA connections and the links to the Soma Corporation, the Hughes Corporation, which was burglarized. And one article just came out February 3rd in a magazine called Advertising Age, February 3rd, 1975. And February the 9th, New York Times, is the article on the burglary. And there is a link here between the CIA and the Hughes Corporation and a Los Angeles Police Department, Leon Jaworski. And when I call it a biggie, I think if all the evidence comes out on this case, this is the way the Sirhan case could open up, or possibly how Sirhan was hired, how Fane Caesar from Lockheed could have been hired. There's a lot of ifs into what's going on into the relationship of these two articles, and I'll try to run them down for you. But it reminds me of the White House tapes, March 21st meeting of the president and John Dean and Robert Haldeman. This is in the Oval Office. And the president was worrying about how to cover up. This is March 21st, and they're worrying how to cover up their losses at the Watergate and to hold the line. And the president says there's a second line of attack, and it says, you never tell them what you know. You only answer questions on the basis of what they tell you. Never tell them what you know. And then Dean says, well, if we go that route, sir, I can give them a show. We can sell them something, just like we're selling Wheaties. The president and John Dean are going to sell us something like they're selling Wheaties. This goes back to J. Walter Thompson mentality of selling us something. And the president says the problem here is that you have these minefields down the road, and the most difficult problem are the guys who are going to jail. He was afraid they would talk and they would have these minefields. Well, one of these minefields that they're faced with now is taking place out in Los Angeles. And as I say, it has to do with the theft of the files. And it's so important, those files are so important, that were stolen from the Hughes Corporation, that the Hughes people offered $500,000 for them, but the Los Angeles Police Department offered $1 million for the files, the Los Angeles Police Department. And in these files are links of high public officials, goodness knows, possibly police officials, hired officials, the links of Howard Hughes to the CIA. And I might take note that Leon Jaworski, the special Watergate prosecutor, is so interested in the theft of these files that he calls the Los Angeles Police Department almost daily for a progress report. Leon Jaworski. Now, this was from the Los Angeles, Sans Day Mercury, February the 9th, UPI story, that Leon Jaworski calls almost daily out to the Los Angeles Police Department. So out in Los Angeles, the police department is putting up a $1 million ransom for the papers, and Jaworski's calling out daily, and the Hughes people have offered $500,000. And what is in that safe we have to talk about in relationship to J. Walter Thompson and Soma Corporation, Howard Hughes. Getting back to the article in the Advertising Age, it tells about the relationship of J. Walter Thompson as a public relations front for intelligence units. And this is what Louis Tackwood said, agent provocateur in L.A., that the future Gestapo was hidden behind a PR window. Criminal conspiracy section is behind a public relations office. It goes back to World War II, when the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, became the CIA. And was J. Walter Thompson advertisers that supplied the key executives to the OSS, which later became the CIA. They opened up overseas offices in Uruguay, and they were involved in public relations activities with Robert Mullen. You know that name from Washington, the public relations firm Robert Mullen that I wrote about in my first Realist article as a cover for the CIA. And Robert Mullen has admitted that this public relations office in Washington did supply the CIA cover for various agents. Now, J. Walter Thompson Advertising Agency worked with Mullen and Company. Mullen quietly closed their operations after Watergate. They opened in 1971, just prior to the elections. They raised a large amount of money through 60 or 90 dummy fronts for Richard Nixon. They closed up after Watergate, but while they were operating in Washington from 71 to 74, they represented Howard Hughes and the ITT, and they were responsible for the clandestine money necessary for Nixon's mandate in 72. Robert Bennett, who has worked for Mullen Corporation, Mullen Company, moved to Los Angeles, where he became director of public relations for Summa Corporation, wholly owned by Howard Hughes to handle the corporate activities. Robert Bennett moved out from Mullen, where they used Hunt and Liddy, and sent them on various agency jobs for ITT and for Hughes from 71 to 7 till they were arrested at the Watergate. Robert Bennett moved out to become the director of public relations for Summa Corporation. He also handled Howard Hughes' account in Washington, D.C. And as I say, Howard Hunt worked for Mullen at the same time that he worked inside the White House, and at the same time he was working for the CIA. All of this I want to bring together is that Robert Mullen and also Robert Bennett and the ITT Hughes Corporation, I believe, are controlled through J. Walter Thompson. There's a mesh here that will link its headquarters down to the Bahamas into that network of espionage that I've been putting together for many years. Robert Bennett said the CIA did use Mullen and Company for their agents overseas. If they asked them to use one for a cover, they said yes. Just recently, they closed their offices in Singapore and Amsterdam and so forth because their cover was being blown. Robert Mullen is a close friend of top J. Walter Thompson executives. There's a very strong link here, and one of them is a Samuel Meek, M-E-E-K, who built up J. Walter Thompson's overseas international relationships. Robert Mullen himself is a retired Rear Admiral and has a lot in common with Meek, who was a decorated in World War I and has a long record in the Marine Corps. This is interesting to me because in the article I did in relation to Watergate and how Richard Nixon came to power, I said he was a clandestine agent selected by a group of people in aerospace and defense industry right from Navy intelligence, and selected as the front man for this team. And I have many, many files of the link of all the J. Walter Thompson people controlling Richard Nixon from the time they had him run against Jerry Voorhees. And then he went down to meet Bibi Rebozo, who was in charge of Nixon on his days off and time off and his payoffs. And Richard Nixon, the controlled president, was run by the Navy, and Gerald Ford, the successor, also was in the same team from the Navy intelligence. I feel that these are the people that control our aerospace, satellites, data banks, and future repressions, whether they're weather controls, famines, starvations, floods, or whatever. The group of scientists that came from Germany that were in conjunction with this team fit in a very tight picture that gets tighter all the time. A man named Peter Dunham was a former J. Walter Thompson vice president for their international group, and he was manager of the J. Walter Thompson offices in Mexico City, and they handled advertising and public relations for Mexico. There's a big relationship between E. Howard Hunt and his CIA assignment in Mexico, September and October 63. When the Watergate story broke, it was the Mexican money and Barker's Bank, which made the White House tremble. They called in their CIA man, Mr. Cushman, from the Marines again to cover up the CIA involvement or the banking, that chain of command, so that we've never heard any more about the Mexican money. And it's still hushed up, and Mr. Jaworski sat on it. He was brought in from Houston, Texas, and he hushed this up and sat on it. And now he wants to know who took the files from the Summa Corporation. Getting back to the connections here to the robbery in Los Angeles, there was another gentleman, I want to bring down a few of these from J. Walter Thompson that are important, a Gene Olive that worked for the CIA, who was a close friend of Robert Mullen's, who worked in Paris on special assignment since 59, who hasn't been seen. The J. Walter Thompson Agency, incidentally, was sent to the military government in Chile to cover up the military junta and give good press releases of the military junta to show that everything is going fine down there. They sent down a man from their agency called Dialogue, a branch of J. Walter Thompson. The man, the president of Dialogue, was earlier linked to the downfall of Greece from J. Walter Thompson Agency, Jacques Raymond. He was sent in public relations firm of J. Walter Thompson to cover the Greek military junta in December 67. You see, the CIA has been named as being responsible for throwing over Greece in April 67. J. Walter Thompson sent Thomas Deegan and Company over there, public relations firm, and Jacques Ramon. Then later, Ramon's firm Dialogue is involved down in Chile, covering up the military government in Chile. And we know, as I say, the conduit of CIA money in Greece, the conduit of CIA money to overthrow Allende in Chile. Then the CIA money was used not only in the John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King murders, but the J. Walter Thompson links to the CIA and Mullen and Company in Washington, D.C., representing Hughes and ITT, comes in the Young Americans for Freedom. The gentlemen from there were in Dallas involved in the Kennedy assassination, and the co-founder and founder of Young Americans for Freedom were out of Mullen Associates working in that office. The CIA, the SLA, took on the J. Walter Thompson Agency in San Francisco at the time of the Zebra killings last year, just in time to promote the Patty Hearst kidnapping given to you through these prestigious public relations firms. And I just read this morning in the news that J. Walter Thompson represents the two shipping lines of Mayor Alioto in San Francisco, which is an interesting fact in lieu of his relationship to the Zebra killings and the Patty Hearst kidnapping. And the New York Times published the Warren Report also had a man from J. Walter Thompson Agency that worked for them for years. And this, it was the same Jacques Ramon who worked for the New York Times. The New York Times published the Warren Report with its introduction that anybody who questioned it was mentally deranged. And they, their agent, who also was working for J. Walter Thompson, had been on the staff of the New York Times for many years and was promoting the lone assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, conspiracy. So the J. Walter Thompson Agency comes through in many of these things, in the military hunt in Greece, in the Zebra, Patty Hearst thing in San Francisco, in the John Kennedy assassination, the promotion of Richard Nixon. Then there's a book out, the OSS, The Secret History of America's First Central Intelligence Agency, by R. Harris Smith. And he says that J. Walter Thompson supplied the chief of the OSS planning staff, the head of their moral operations branch, in London, and they supplied them with their executive officers in Cairo and their black propaganda specialists in Casablanca. The J. Walter Thompson was doing all that. They were supplying these agents during the Cold War from the OSS to the CIA. In a Realist article that I did in July 73, I talked about J. Walter Thompson being head of the World War II War Advertising Council with advertising campaigns and worked for the Ford Foundation. And I mentioned a James Webb Young, former vice president, director of J. Walter Thompson, who conceived the idea of the War Advertising Council and worked for Nelson Rockefeller, coordinating inter-American affairs in South America. I had that as a footnote in the Realist article in July 73. Well, it's important that Mr. Bennett, from J. Walter Thompson Agency, from the Mullen Associates that broke out, came out to California, and I want to show you the links now of that to the Soma Corporation, because there is a link here to, swinging now to the New York Times article about Howard Hughes' headquarters being burglarized, because I think it's important that the office that Robert Bennett had representing Howard Hughes in Washington, D.C., when it broke up, he came out to California to work for this Hughes empire, and it was this empire that was robbed in a very strange way. But the papers that will come out may help us researchers into the political corruption and conspiracy in the United States. 8 months ago, June 5th, 1974, the Howard Hughes headquarters were burglarized in Los Angeles at 720 Romaine Street. Now, this was known as the Hughes Empire for a quarter of a century. It was the nerve center of the Hughes Empire. Now, that's an interesting point, because I maintain that Howard Hughes hasn't been seen for 20 years. 25 years ago on Romaine Street, this was set up. 2 years later, Secretary of the Air Force Harold Talbot was the one who told Howard Hughes in the presence of Noah Dietrich that it was a mistake entrusting the nation's security to an eccentric like you. Then the Hughes Medical Foundation was set up, public relations firm, and then Mr. Bennett came out here just recently, and after he arrived here, these safes, two of the 11 safes, were broken into. Now, the Hughes officials offered $500,000 for the documents that were stolen, but the Los Angeles law enforcement want $1 million for the documents. Now, no one will say where the $1 million is coming from or why the law officials want $1 million for papers that the user organization only will offer $500,000 for, or why Leon Jaworski calls out daily to find out what's going on. But two large safes were opened and ransacked. And incidentally, as I'm talking about this, this is coming from the New York Times. The California papers are having hardly anything or nothing about what is going on out here. It's coming from the East. Two large safes were opened and ransacked. And what is claimed is these papers would show the links of the Howard Hughes empire to the CIA, and they've been taken out of these safes. There's a Los Angeles man who's ready to testify before a grand jury this week. He has copies of a few of the stolen documents. And there's a difference in what was listed as stolen and what appeared in the press. The burglary was put down only one day. It said some items were sold from the stolen from the Hughes Empire, but secrecy was imposed immediately on the stealing of the Hughes papers by the Los Angeles Police Department. Commander Pete Hagan, the public relations spokesman for the Los Angeles Police Department, who's handling the matter and has imposed the secrecy, is the same Commander Hagan who, as a public relations man, called in the TV cameras to be present when the six SLA people were burned alive during your dinner TV. There was a lot of publicity to that cremation, and the same Commander Hagan who wants this secrecy on the newspapers and the police down there offering $1 million for them, there's an order down there, and this thing has been quieted about it. But 10 days ago, certain aspects of the burglary began to appear, even though the burglary was 8 months ago, and copies of different documents began to surface, and somebody's trying to sell them over to Der Spiegel over in West Germany. They're two large footlockers, and the agents down there are afraid that whatever was stolen will be copied before it's returned, and they don't know when they return it at what point this blackmail or this covering up isn't going to continue going on. And this is the kind of what I call the minefield that President Nixon talked about March 21st. It had to be the kind of thing he said to Dean, although Dean says we can sell them a cover-up like we're selling Wheaties, and the president says we have these minefields down the road. Well, the New York Times says that these documents are explosive, that there's information about financial contributions of Mr. Hughes to politicians, about dealings with the Central Intelligence Agency and the Atomic Energy Commission, and about, in quotes, other matters of a sensitive nature affecting the federal government. Now, it's interesting that Robert Bennett came out to head the Public Relations Department of the Summa Corporation at a time when, just before this particular thing took place, but it also coincides, this is very interesting, the precision with which these safes were cut open. You remember at the Watergate, there was a subject of getting E. Howard Hunt and Liddy out to Las Vegas to get into Mr. Greenspan's tapes and take certain papers out of those tapes, out of the safe. But Howard Hughes' airplane was to help them fly out of town, but that never came off the ground, getting into those safes. But they don't know how the precision with which burglars cut into these safes. The Royal Marine building has more than a dozen safes. They have large vaults. They have buildings with telephone switchboards, entire staff, 24 hours a day. And it's through these switchboards that somebody, I claim Hughes is dead, but somebody relays instructions to executives by telephone or courier. The second interesting thing, not only how they got in there and got into the safes, but the timing of the burglary. Because May 31st, Judge Harry Pragerson asked the Hughes attorney to produce letters. Robert Mayhew had said that he had 500 handwritten letters from Howard Hughes to Mayhew. Now, those would be interesting because I think that Mayhew knows that Howard Hughes is dead. And if these handwritten memorandum are turned over, there may be fingerprints or handwriting that experts could see to prove whether Hughes is alive or dead or not. So it's interesting that when the legal fight was going on between Robert Mayhew and Summa Corporation, that Robert Bennett came out to head from the Mullen Corporation, that these documents all disappeared. They don't know where the memos were, and they have all disappeared. Now, 6 days after the judge asked for those documents, the Romaine headquarters were burglarized. And among the stolen documents were supposed to be handwritten memorandum from Hughes to Mayhew. They were supposed to be on yellow, legal-sized ruling paper, and these have disappeared. Now, I feel that it's this kind of evidence floating around where people can see it and copy it, that is going to be the kind of information that will open up these cases. I know back in Boston, I mentioned the fact that I have a document taken at the National Archives, not only with Lee Harvey Oswald's FBI number, which was in Gerald Ford's own book, and which is common knowledge to the researchers and reporters, but I have Oswald's CIA number, which was on microfilm in the National Archives, which I have now sent to various members of Congress and have disseminated among the researchers his CIA number. And this comes from Dallas, Texas, from a law enforcement official down there. And with Mr. Kelly says we won't open the case, and Gerald Ford says we won't open the case, and the Supreme Court says we won't open Sirhan's case, I think it's only a matter of time until these things are properly investigated and gone into. And I think there is going to be a strong link between the Hughes Soma Corporation, J. Walter Thompson Agency, Mullen Associates, Robert Bennett. There is a link of employment, of propaganda, of covering the Greek military junta, which the CIA did, covering the Chile, killing of Allende, the overthrow of Chile, which the CIA did, covering the John Kennedy assassination, which the CIA did, instigating the Zebra and SLA monstrosity up in the Bay Area, which they are intensifying with bombing all over the country, which I believe are phony front organizations, just like this gentleman has said from the FBI, Joseph Burton. He set up his little phony Marxist organization and gave it a name, the Red Star Cadre. I think the kidnappings and the bombings are set up by these organizations. And I think in the articles, the three articles I did for The Realist, July 72, the article on Martha Mitchell, I talked about the connections of the CIA in the White House with E. Howard Hunt through the public relations firms. I mentioned Howard Hughes and Robert Bennett, Mullen and Company, the 75 to 95, 90 dummy fronts, the secret $10 million for Nixon, and how do you separate from CIA money. I wrote at length in various sections of that article about the J. Walter Thompson, Robert Mullen, the CIA, and the links of Mullen Associates to the manipulation of our electoral process and the planning for violence and possibly a military junta down in Miami after the nomination of the Democrats. If Muskie and Ted Kennedy or winning team were nominated, we would have seen this violence, and this secret is still concealed, and it involves the public relations of the advertising firms covering up the act, but also a cover for active agents, like Lewis Tackwood said, down in the Los Angeles Police Department. And as I say in the July 73 Realist, I talked about the J. Walter Thompson Agency, and I said that when Nixon and Haldeman and Ehrlichman and that White House cadre were out, they would replace the War Advertising Agency, the cover of being a political party, with the Pentagon. And you have Mr. Ford, Gerald Ford, completely encased by the Pentagon at the present time, and as much control of the Pentagon and Schlesinger and the Defense Intelligence Agency as you had Richard Nixon. And then in the article I did, the SLA is the CIA, I mentioned that J. Walter Thompson had been assigned to the police department in San Francisco just prior to the Zebra killings, and there were links between the J. Walter Thompson public relationship to the LAPD, to the San Francisco police, to the military dictatorships in Greece and Chile, to the kidnappings and motiveless murders. And again, when Richard Nixon talks about covering up minefields along the way, and John Dean talks about selling their cover-up like they're selling Wheaties, what they're really doing is trying to conceal not only the modus operandi of putting candidates in office or funding them, but the necessity for the secrecy. What are the people doing, and who is stealing from these safes now? What will we find out in these papers? Well, I think for the next 10 years we're going to find out plenty. Because somebody knew how to leave tape at the Watergate Hotel so that these men came down, and James McCord knew how to squeal just at the right time to catch more of the fellows in a trap than the original seven that were caught. And McCord still isn't in jail. He's still walking around, and he knew what he was doing. And somebody's gone into the Soma Corporation, which is airtight and security guards all the time, and has taken these tapes, whether it's counterintelligence finally bringing a certain fascism to a halt, or whether it's for blackmail and personal gain, we don't know. I do like to feel that there is some counterintelligence in this country that will bring to a grinding halt the acts that we're doing under the guise of national security, just like this Joseph Burton that worked for the FBI, who's surfacing now and did go to China once and did meet over there paid by the FBI, who says that he's stopping his work now because he says, I don't want to insult the Chinese by pulling stupid things on them any longer. Maybe the Soma place was robbed because of that, but there are tight links between the White House, Howard Hughes, ITT, the J. Walter Thompson Advertising Agency, military dictatorships, and in 45 minutes or 30 minutes, we can't go into all the links, but get these articles if you can, and I'll see you next week. One was Advertising Age, February 3rd, 75, on J. Walter Thompson's links to Robert Bennett, Mullen, and the CIA, and the other one is the New York Times, February the 9th, 1975, on the theft of the secret papers in Los Angeles. Get those two if you can and save them, because you'll see a lot more headlines coming as a result of those thefts. Okay, our time is up now. I rolled along fast. We had a lot to cover today. I'll see you next week. Take a breather. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.